Insecurity Podcast. And Vicky's fight to the last. Inside and the know-how. We take the challenge now.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Security MVP Insight Series within the Talking Security Podcast. I'm Frans Oudendorp, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Pujan Gabasi. And we are excited to bring you the fourth episode in our series, where we continue to explore the ever-evolving world of cybersecurity.
Thanks, Frans. In this series, we delve into global and local cybersecurity challenges, provide expert insights on emerging trends, and showcase innovative solutions from our MVPs. And for today's episode, we have a great guest with us. Gianni Castaldi is a highly renowned security specialist and a Microsoft Security MVP. Gianni has a wealth of experience in identifying but also mitigating cyber threats for organizations across various industries, and we are eager to gain his insights today.
And in addition to his work as a security specialist, Gianni is a prolific speaker and author, not in books, but he has his own blog. What is it? Blog.custo?
It's my Custo King blog. I started writing about everything KQL. So it's a while back since I wrote, because there are so many things to do, but it's still a pretty well-visited blog.
Yeah, I'm contributing to numerous industry conferences, WP Ninjas, for example.
Yeah.
He will organize his own event, where we'll talk a bit on later on. He also shares his knowledge through his podcast, or should we call it different, KQL Cafe. And we are thrilled to have him on the show to discuss some of the critical cybersecurity challenges and trends he observed in the industry. So let's jump into our conversation. Gianni, welcome to the Security MVP Insights. We're super enthusiastic to have you here. To start things off, could you tell us a bit about your background?
Thank you, Frans. Love to be here. So I'm Gianni Castaldi, nowadays 38 years old. And I started back in the days as a systems engineer, help desk engineer, remote support engineer. I just walked the basic infra path. And after that, back in 2017, I was working at a factory site where we were migrating Windows XP to Windows 7, Server 2003 to the ISO 8, 12, and stuff like that. And then my former employee was thinking about doing an OT SOC service. So we were looking into working with Palo Alto, and back in the days there was the new Tenable OT software, and we also worked with several products to see if we could create a OT SOC. But 2017, we were a bit early. So after that, I joined Dutch MSSP Wortel, where we built a SOC service, an MDR service. And after that, I briefly joined Pujan to discover some more things. And now, since the last 2 years, I'm an independent contractor. So I help small, medium, large environments improve their security, mainly through the Microsoft Security Stack, Defender, Sentinel. And also, in the basics, I support the customer security. So if they have Palo Alto, I work with that. If they have some other cool blinky boxes, we'll help them making more secure with those.
Nice. And Gianni, in the meantime, you became a Microsoft Security MVP. How was that road to become that? What did you do, and what contributions? What did you do to be nominated, for example, and so on?
So when I started working with Sentinel back in 2019, I did a lot of things with Sentinel, with KQL, and my thing is always to build cool things in Sentinel and to make sure that it's being used properly, because sometimes people don't use everything or they start using too much. So I started blogging about Custo. I did some other blogs on Medium, and it's for me, becoming an MVP was through the Microsoft security stack, and also interacting with the product teams. With nowadays, it's called the Customer Connection Program, which gives us really cool tools to play around with. So if you're not a member, register, because it's fun.
Yeah, but talking about the CCP, please have a look at our... it's not the next recording, but the last recording of this season. We will talk with Pablo and Katie from the CCP team.
Wow.
You definitely need to join that that episode as well to see what the CCP program can bring and can help for us MVPs, but also customers, consultants, whatever.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So
yeah.
With that journey, I mean, you have been really, you made the journey from what you see these days a lot, from the integrator to the security expert. And I think this is really great because you have a great understanding. And of course, everybody knows you these days mainly for your Keiko expertise these days. But besides that, what are your primary areas of expertise that you are really focusing on in the realm of Microsoft technology and cybersecurity these days?
I think still my main focus is Sentinel and Defender. But basically what happens a lot is that a company gets any product, if it's a firewall or AV, or they always they configure it to a certain level because that's within the project. But you should review your systems like every 3 months, every 6 months, just to get a feeling, hey, do we have new features, do we need to change things? Maybe a feature is deprecated, but the rest of your security is leaning on it. So my main goal is always to make sure that companies use their products in optimal way.
And looking at the products that you use, that customers use, what are what are the challenges that you are facing when working with these kind of technologies at your customers?
It has several sides, because first, customers want to cover their security gaps, so they get a product and then they use it to cover the gap. But what happens is that they maybe not fully configure it, or maybe configure it in a way that it fits within the organization instead of how the product is meant. And on the other side, there's always with KQL, with any security product, if you build detections, you have to think about how do you want to build them? How do you research them? How do you share the knowledge about what you created, because that's a whole side. Because in the end, a detection is not just 10 lines of Custo, but it's an idea, because you want to prevent behavior, or you want to see behavior, or you want to maybe even block things. But that's something a lot of people don't think about it at first. And then once you have like 100 detections, 200 detections, all of a sudden it's, oh, wait, we should have thought about how do we reproduce things, how do we test things, how do we validate that what we have is still at this right configuration. So that's nice. I think. And also,
nice, Gio.
Gio,
and these challenges, are there any specific project that you are working on to solve this from the community perspective? We know you are doing something big with KQL that's coming on. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So first,
how do you see that's going to maybe solve a little bit the problems or not?
I think it will be fun, because what we're doing now is a good friend of mine, Alex Fairbone, he's also an MVP. We are working on a Custo conference, where we have about, I think we'll be having 6 or maybe 7 sessions, where we will be talking about the Custo query language, And we're now currently talking with the sponsor of the location because they have a big, nice, beautiful renewed studio. But we need to figure out if we can arrange that, and if not, we'll have to move. But the plan is to do it on the 8th of November. We're going to do a CustoCon, and look at CustoCon.com. The site isn't up yet, but as soon as we have more, we'll post it on there.
Nice. And it's going to be a remote event, right?
Yeah, so we want to have the speakers on site, so we will be together at the studio, and then the guests will be remote. And we're also thinking about the future a bit, maybe to do a in-person or hybrid session, but we need to figure that out. And I think, regards of the timeline, it will maybe be May next year, because now we have the Workplace Ninjas Summit, then you're going into Christmas. Next year of March, we have the MVP Summit, of course, and then somewhere in May would be a nice opportunity, I think, to have a nice KQL party.
Nice. Looking really well forward to it. I think KQL is a Rod said it once, and I think you loved that, but I didn't like it that much. KQL is the new power show. So I think it's besides security, of course, a really interesting topic also for data scientists and other topics. I believe you had also some data scientists on your episodes as well, because the other data platforms are using the same language model, right?
Yes, exactly. It's the Azure Data Explorer. I believe in Synapse you can also use it. You have basically every new tool that comes out now uses the Custo Query language, because it's a really powerful read-only language, so it's pretty fast, but still, when you feed it a lot of data, it can cause delays, but it's usually pretty fast.
Yeah. And looking a little bit back from the Custo query, maybe, and looking around to the cybersecurity ecosystem these days, what's in your opinion the biggest cybersecurity challenges that we are facing on the global scale, maybe, but also on the local scale as well?
I think it's two ways, because one, there is a lot happening always. There's a lot of new products, new tools, new exploits, new. There's a lot of things happening which security people need to get up and need to know and need to cover. And on the other hand, the older people, well, older like me, we have a background. Frans. So we have a background in IT. You know, I was a system engineer. I did AD. I did all the things. You had separate IAM teams. You had Exchange teams. So everyone has a special expertise, and nowadays it's usually, hey, we set up an Entra ID, we connect our devices, we do autopilot, and all of a sudden there's this everything. But people don't get the chance to discover the technology because there's happening too much. And I think also with all the ideas of automating and with AI, I think people will miss the opportunity to grind on knowledge, on how things work. Because in the end, every tool, every executable, every vector, you can dive deep for months in something to learn how things work. And I think we're missing that opportunity now because it's just too much.
Yeah, it's fun that you're talking about knowledge, because this is one of the conversations that we had last year. On different conferences, not only at the WP Ninjas, but also on Experts Live and other conferences with trainers and with some older guys, so to say, the background that we have as a system admin and managing AD, Exchange, all the on-prem stuff, that helps definitely to understand cloud services that Microsoft, Google, AWS, that every cloud provider is delivering. And so we know because we have managed that on-prem stuff years ago, so we know how it works in cloud, because the cloud is just another computer. That is what people say, and I think it's a bit more than another computer. It's a bit bigger, but I think that the structure and the systems are still more or less the same, because the technology is evolving, definitely, but the basics are still the same. And I think if you know what the basics are, then you can understand what Microsoft is doing, what Amazon is doing on their cloud systems. Yes, I totally agree with that. And it's fun that you bring that on the table. Talking about regulations, looking at, we're based in the Netherlands. Do we have some specific challenges, regulations that are specific for the area that where we live in?
Well, there are several regulations. You have the GDPR, our own version, the AVG. There's the NIS2 now coming out. But in the end, I think it's good that the regulations are there, but I would prefer that companies just would pick a standard. There's ISO, there's 27,000 series, but also from NIST, they have a good some standards. The cybersecurity framework 2.0 is there. There are several incident response frameworks. They have a lot of frameworks. But if you just would pick one and go for that and make sure that you have thought about your processes, about how you want to do things, how you don't want to do things, how you document things, how you handle things. If you just pick a framework and adhere to it.
Yeah. I think that's important. But you're mentioning some frameworks that are more globally, do we have some local challenges here in the Netherlands, or are they more or less the same within Europe, for example? Because NIS2, it's a regulation from Europe. If we look at AVG, that's more or less local, but it's on the other side, it's based on a European regulation that we have. In the second episode that we have, we talked with Thijs. It's from Belgium, Thijs Lecomte. And Thijs was also mentioning it's not directly that we have differences between Belgium and the Netherlands. It's more based in Europe. So probably we have some differences between the US and Europe, but not directly difference within the Netherlands. What do you think?
Yeah, it's mainly the European laws are derived of one standard, and then in the America you have a lot of regulations, policies, but it's also, I think, for the Netherlands. Let's see, the biggest challenge.
On the other hand, how do you deal with that kind of regulations? How do you navigate through this stuff?
Great question. Like I said, if I build something, if I think of policies, I prefer to think of doing the right thing. So, for instance, I'm currently working on an application, and from the application side, I thought, hey, if someone leaves my product, then I want to make sure that I'm able to delete the data. If someone is asking, hey, what kind of data do you have about me? Because that's also GDPR. I want to be able to deliver it. So those kinds of things I try to think of up front. Or also, hey, if a customer leaves, then you might want to delete the data after a year. You can say, hey, following guidelines, you can keep it 2 years, maybe even 7 years. But I think if you think about how you need the data, how long you need it, then that works better. And then because in the end, the current laws and regulations, they aren't heavy. It's just common knowledge. You need to think about what you're doing. And also with the NIS2, you need to make sure that you have tested your security policies, that you have an incident response plan, that your team is aware of those things. So in the end, common knowledge and logical thinking saves you in almost every case.
Nice. Yeah, and I think I agree with you, Gianni, because I think there's a difference. What you are trying to point out is the you got the law regulations, which are more theoretical, and you have like more the public standards that are more on the technical side, how to do it then as well. And I think that's more important to the how than, because we have some regulation that say, you need to have a SIM, right? But what do you do with it and how do you do with it? That's much more interesting. Definitely for us as technical guys in this podcast. And if we zoom a little bit to your current role and the work that you are doing, can you share with our listeners some examples of your recent projects that you have been working on, or some security solutions or innovations you have been implementing? I can imagine if non-NDA is breached with customers, but what kind of impact did that make for the customer or the community that you did that for?
Where to begin? So, let's see, because from one of the things which I like to talk about is detection engineering. I help customers with those. And one of the talks I'm presenting at the Workplace Ninja Summit and also at the Dutch Microsoft Security Meetup, I will be having a session about detection engineering, because the detection engineering isn't like a... And you don't have, when you go to school, university, you don't have like a track for detection engineering. It's getting there a bit, but it's not. So what I'm working on is based on my own research and some other research, is to combine that and make a overview of how should you create detections, how should you research them, how should you document it? Because if you have an ID for a detection, then you might want to see if it's feasible or not. But even if it's not feasible, you still should document it. And there is some research about, for instance, you have the signal detection theory, and you have it also in biometrics. You have the FCC and the FEC, the false positive, the false negative rate. And you want to think about how your detections are affected if you maybe make a suppression for something. And if you tune your detection rules, you might miss something. And if you tune it too much, you get maybe a false negative, so that an adversary is in your environment, but your SIEM doesn't see it. And the danger with that is that for false positive, the SIEM team, the SOC team will see it. But if you have a false negative, no one sees it, but there's something happening in your environment. So there are a lot of things to think about, and I'm trying to sum that up in a nice talk presentation to make sure that people be aware about the impact that changes can make. So I think that's the most interesting thing I'm doing at the moment. And then I'm doing some detection engineering, but I'm sharing those things also through the KQL Cafe, which we do every month with Alex. And then for work, the impact, I think the most impactful, I think back in 2020, we had an incident response situation with a customer where we were already doing the incident response, and we worked together with the Microsoft Dart team to help the customer. But it was also good to know that what we were doing, deploying Sentinel, deploying Defender for Identity, Endpoint, all the goodness, that was more or less the same starting point for the Microsoft Dart team. So that was a good thing. And yeah, they did a lot of magic in the forensics because they had the tools. But it was fun to see and to help the customer and to work together with Microsoft to get the customer back on track.
And talking about the rapid responses, talking about Microsoft Dart, that's helping within a rapid response stuff that is sometimes needed. We are kind of doing some automation nowadays, a lot of automation, and we can use KQL for that, for example. Rapid response and automation. How do you approach the balance between them? Is there what has a preferable above the other? What do you think?
In regards of automation, I think there is the most important thing is the maturity of the environment. Because if your environment is mature, you have a low amount of alerts and the alert quality is high because there aren't a lot of alerts because your security products are configured correctly and your security controls are up to date and everything should be nice. So if an alert triggers, then you know, hey, users can't do this by themselves. So then it would be a good time to start automating. But if you have an environment with a lot of noise, then you also get a lot of issues with your automation. So I think you should configure your environment properly and then start automating, or accept the risk that if your automation goes haywire, then you might have like 5% of your users need to reset the password. It can be possible, but then you should have your service desk or your IT team should be sufficiently staffed to handle those issues.
Nice. Yeah, we had, in the episode, which will be released this week, with Matthias, also great topic on the whole SOAR and the automation, how to respond with it. And I think that's one of the things that we agreed there as well. The quality of your detection is really crucial when it comes to that. But because indeed, what you say, if you have a not the right detection, or you have a lot of false positives and you have a lot of automation going on, and suddenly you start resetting all kind of accounts within your organization, then yeah, you have a bigger problem maybe then. So yeah, definitely true. But do you see that also looking forward to the future as something that can impact the cybersecurity landscape? And if not, what other trends do you see in the cybersecurity landscape for the coming years?
I think automation can help, but you need to think of ways that it can help. Because, for instance, if you have a SOC team which communicates a lot with users, you can automate the first contact with your end users, the first initial checks. There are a lot of ways that you can properly do a good automation without disrupting things. Start with enrichment and not with impactful things. But that's a way. And I think for the upcoming years, if you look now at environments, the most challenges I see is in regards of network data. When a company has Checkpoint or Palo Alto or FortiGate or whatever, if you have a good firewall, then all of a sudden there's a need also to do something with the logs. And at one side,
get those logs in Sentinel or not?
That's the question. So if you're a large enterprise, you might want to ship them all to Sentinel, but I'm not sure if that's the right thing to do, because then you have all of a sudden you have terabytes a day of logs because you have hundreds of firewalls. And also for a smaller organization, if you have three firewalls, then you can also rack up about €1,000 a day of ingestion. So I think the challenge would be to have some sort of network detection tool where you can route your traffic to or do some other cool things just to make some sense out of your data, because it's at the moment it's too much. And there are tools, you have Cribble, you have even an open source tool, Logslash, where you can reduce the size of your logs, but it's still a hard thing to do. And I've spoken with a customer 2 days ago, and we had a discussion about what should we do with the logs, because back in the days when you had QRadar, QRadar has a context because it knows about your network, it knows what you should and should be happening, and it had some nice anomaly detections. And nowadays you have to create them in Sentinel, which isn't that hard. But the problem is, which data do you want in your SIEM? Because your SIEM isn't a party for just all your data. It's not a data lake. Microsoft is working on a lot of cool features to do something with logs and with dynamic logging and all kind of cool stuff, which I hope comes in the next 6 months. But no. Still, for the network, you might want to have something. Because on the one side, you trust your firewall vendor. You have all the AV, the wildfire, all the goodness that you secure your network with. But then on the other side, if something happens, you can ship the alert to your SIEM, but then the SOC team needs to investigate. And where do they investigate? How do they investigate? So I think that would be a nice... I would love to see the challenge solved within the next year, but who knows?
Yeah, I think it's indeed a hard one, because you need the data often when you are doing the investigation. But I think you see that as well, that some customers want the data to compare to their own trading tool. Then it's maybe a little bit of an too expensive solution for that as well. But what I saw a while ago in a Microsoft presentation, and I think it was really great, is that they said Sentinel is not only for security. It's like, you have IT operation, you have security operations, and both can, if the right agreements are made, consume the same data, but often they use it for different purposes. So I think, do you agree with that as well, that organizations and teams can share the Sentinel environment?
Tough question, because in the end, in your SIEM, you might have some data which you don't want to share between teams. There can be things happening that the SOC team or the security team should be aware of, but maybe the IT team shouldn't. So, what I would do
is... With the right configuration and the right agreement between the teams, I think then.
If the tool is fit for your team, then you can use it. Yeah. But I think if I would manage IT systems, I would look into a specific tool for that. Because in the end, you need to have a CMDB, but your SIEM isn't always fully aware of all the devices you have. Your EDR also isn't. So that still needs to be separate. And yes, you can offload data from your SIEM and from your EDR to your CMDB. But still, I think you should use it for enrichment, but I don't think the IT team should work in the security systems.
Nice.
Any other question regarding this stuff? Otherwise, we will go to our... standard question that we have. We have our AI question that is coming back every episode. So what I've done, I take some of your personal information that you shared with us, and I give it to ChatGPT, AI, Copilot, whatever you name it. And then all all your information is coming back, and I ask ChatGPT to give me one short question based on your information. And I think this one is very funny, because ChatGPT asked us, Johnny, how do you balance your cybersecurity career with your personal interest, like mountain biking and spending time with your kids. And I think you're not the only one with this challenge, probably.
So, yeah, good question, ChatGPT. So, I think for me, what works is to have a cadence. If I do, because for the KQL Cafe, every Monday evening, I do a call with Alex to discuss our next show. And then for with the kids, or for instance, on Monday before the meeting with Alex, I go with the oldest to the swimming pool. And on Wednesdays, I go to in this case, CrossFit. And on Saturdays and throughout the week, I have some plans to do some learning, to do blogging, to do whatever needed to keep up my knowledge. But as long as you keep the pace, it's good. But if you are out of sync or out of beat, then it gets tough. So for me, what works is just making the same schedule. And also, sometimes it's not hard to have it tough, I think, because that also keeps your mind a bit clear. Because if you're just relaxing all day on the couch, it's not good for your mind. And also,
sometimes being a bit tough on yourself.
Yeah, sometimes it's fine. But also, if you look at the oldest people in Europe, it's a small town in Italy, and the people get old because they have a tough life. When they go to the store, they have to climb the mountain. They have to walk with their groceries back up the mountain. They have to walk all about because nothing is nearby. That's because you challenge yourself and your body that people get older. So challenging yourself is good, but you don't have to run in the wall, because I think in the end, everyone has that experience at least once in their career. If you want everything at the same time, then you crash into the wall and then you have to recover a bit. So I think the main thing is just find the right cadence for yourself. Don't overrun. And it's also okay to leave things for a week or two. It's not, there's more than just IT security. It's there's life outside of security.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
And but, to add on that, I think the people in Italy also have a great, great food. So that helps a lot. I mean, if I would have that kind of quality food every day, then I would become old as well.
I think we can both agree with that, Puyan, because Johnny, all three of us are based in the Netherlands, and Johnny has realized some food in the past for us. So that was quite good. Thanks for that. Going back and going forward to finish this recording a bit up. Talking about community collaboration, how important is that in the field of cybersecurity for you? And maybe you can share some experience where that makes a significant difference.
I think the difference is because also as a contractor, I like to work in different environments, because you can be really good in your own environment, but it's just a postamp in the whole world. It's just your environment. If you're a pro in your environment, the next environment will be different. So it's important to share knowledge, to keep yourself up to date, to also share experiences. Because if you come to see a attack, or if you see an alert, or if you see a specific situation, then it might also happen to other organizations. But also, one person can't know everything, and especially in the smaller organizations, IT security teams are quite small. So it's good to have a platform to share your knowledge. And it can be meetups, it can be WhatsApp groups, it can be just in-person talks. It's just important to share the knowledge, because you can't know everything. So, or you need to find it on the internet, or you need to know the right people. Because I also have some people, when I run into conditional access, I call Kenneth. If I run into something workplace, I call Franz. If there are there are people which you can help, and it's good that we have this open community, because on the other hand, the hackers also, they have their GitHub, they have their Telegram channels, they have their ways to share knowledge. So as security, we should also share the knowledge and help each other get better.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, that's the idea of the community, right? We are there for each other and for who is not part of the community. So to close the episode, and thank you for the great input, Gio. The last question would be, what are your personal or professional goals for the coming period? And we know all you are going to have a great summer, so what is it going to happen after that? What can we expect the coming period from you? What have you on your to-dos?
Personally, I'm trying to get fit more. It's this year, I on the knowledge side, I did the SIFT training. I did a SANS course, which I think in the second half of the year, I'll also do the exam. I have the Workplace Ninja Summit talks, which I'm preparing. So that's on the private side. I think it's enough to fill the rest of the year. And on the work side, I'm trying to figure out a detection as a service library thing, where I want to help the smaller and the medium customers just to improve the use of their security products. Like I said at the beginning of this show, I know companies or organizations who got a Defender instance or got a Sentinel instance from a project. It was installed 2 years ago and they are following up the alerts, but there's just no one to help them. And I want to be able to, at scale, help organizations improve their security. So I'm currently working with a good developer to build a nice portal where I can have a bit of CRM, bit of user registration, but also the whole detection engineering lifecycle, which I will be talking about at the Workplace NIA Summit, just to have a default framework to do that and to help customers. So that's the professional ride, which I hope it will be ready before the Workplace Ninja Summit, but I think it's going to take a while because Rome hasn't been built in one day.
And that's already nearby. So
it's almost Christmas, Franz.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Gianni, for sharing your valuable insights and expertise with us today. It's been fascinating discussing KQL, CustoCon, technology and challenges in cybersecurity. And thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for hosting this.
And for our listeners, if you want to learn more from Gianni, be sure to check out KQL Cafe. Where can we find that, Gianni?
KQLcafe.com.
And CustoCon, the virtual conference that's coming up. And as always, if you have questions or topics you'd like to us to cover in a future episode, for example, please reach out to us through our website or our social media channels. Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of the Security MVP Insights. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on the latest episodes. We will be back soon with more expert insights and discussions on the world of cybersecurity. Poyan, thanks. Until next time, stay safe and stay secure.